Brought to you by the Capital One Venture X Card. Earn unlimited 2x miles on everything you buy and turn everyday purchases into extraordinary trips. Plus, receive premium travel benefits like access to over 1,300 airport lounges and a $300 annual credit for bookings through Capital One Travel. Unlock a whole new world of travel with the Capital One Venture X Card. What's in your wallet? Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Life in our modern age comes at you pretty fast, which makes our time away especially valuable. When I take time to relax, I like to get far from my everyday life, immerse myself in natural beauty, and have unique experiences. But you don't have to leave the U.S. to experience tropical rainforests and islands filled with adventure, warm culture, and national treasures. Visit Puerto Rico, an island with a vibrant spirit that will sweep you away. Because when you visit, you don't become part of the island, it becomes part of you. In Puerto Rico, you can forget where you came from and embrace where you are. Puerto Rico, where visits end, but stories last forever. No passport required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. Learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.
Welcome to Stuff You Should Know, a production of iHeartRadio.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh Buzzin' Clark, and there's Chuck Zippy Zap Bryant.
Okay.
It's just the two of us, so I don't have to come up with any more stupid electricity-based names. Jerry,
she's gone.
Yeah, she's, we don't
know. Not here.
She just zapped off into the ether.
Absent, who knows?
Yeah. We should call roll, Chuck. Okay.
Yeah.
Josh, here. Chuck.
Present.
Jerry?
No, she's not here.
Yeah, I guess not.
Dude, I just had a shower today for the first time in a few days because we didn't have water at our house.
No.
And I put this on the Movie Crushers page just to get some feedback. I was like, would you rather not have power or water? And that kind of figures into today's episode. And,
great.
You know, 98% of the people are very sensible and said would much rather not have power than water.
Yeah.
But there were a handful of psychopaths that said they'd rather be, I guess, just buying dozens of gallons of water to flush toilets and wash hands and not bathe.
At what point, though, of going without water, and maybe you reach this point and you can tell me, do you get to where you're like, well, we're just going to save water and dig a pit and pee into that?
A latrine? Well, I mean, we were letting the yellow mellow, you know what I'm saying?
Unfortunately,
but,
yes.
You know, the brown you got to flush down.
You should trademark that.
And it really hits home how much water a toilet uses when you have to fill it up.
Yeah.
With those huge, like, Arrowhead 5-gallon jugs.
Yeah.
And it's just shameful, but, you know, I was happy to take that shower, I got to tell you.
Yeah. But you go through 3 of those 5-gallon jugs before you realize that you're accidentally stepping on the handle and they're just going right down the drain. You're like, man, this is not my week.
But this isn't about water. It's about power.
Which, you know, it's a really good question. And I'm not surprised that the you got the response that you got from it. Because, yeah, like, we tend to think of, like, you know, electricity is, you know, a really nice modern luxury. And that is basically not the case anymore. For most of the climates in the United States, electricity, yeah, is an absolute necessity. It's not a luxury. Like, you need it to survive in the modern world. You could try to do the Ted Kaczynski thing, go off grid. People do it successfully. But even then, if you look into what they're doing, I would guess something in the neighborhood of 90% of those people are still using something like solar power or wind power. They just aren't connected to this grid that we're going to talk about today.
Yeah, and I should caveat, the question I posed to the Movie Crushers was weather aside. Like, obviously, in the hot, hot summer, people can and do die from outages, and in the winter they do as well.
Yeah.
But it was, you know, that wasn't the case here in Atlanta, although it is cold today. Weirdly.
Yeah, it is very cold, but I mean, not deadly cold, but it gets deadly cold once in a while here. But even beyond, like, heating and cooling, just to stay alive, like, electricity is so interwoven with our lives that, you're like, okay, I could wash dishes by hand, you know, it's not my preference, but whatever. Or, you know, I can use the old gas-powered lawnmower instead of the electric lawnmower. But there's also like, can you keep up in school or at work without, you know, electricity? Mm-hmm. It's really just it's a fundamental necessity in modern industrial life. And we get this based on this huge, sprawling, rickety old black and white cartoon donkey of an engineering marvel that we call the electrical grid. It's crazy how held together with like duct tape and bubble gum this thing is, but it still literally delivers the juice for us.
Yeah. And it is funny how it's so like power and water, you know, here in the United States is so ingrained as just something we kind of take for granted that when you don't have it is the only time you notice. And like the only fun thing about the past few days was hearing Emily scream from another room because, you know, your instinct is, oh, I have grease on my finger. Let me go wash it off. And just hearing her like flick, you know, some faucet or something somewhere in the house over the past 3 days and nothing comes out because you just forget. Same when the power's off, you're constantly flicking a switch and going, yeah.
I hate life.
It's not there.
Yeah. Well, but that's why you'll see in a lot of different like power companies' names, the word reliability, because
yeah, right.
That is key. Like you can't have, you know, an electric company that's just kind of like, oh, we work a lot of the time, you know, don't right. we get credit for that? It's like, no, people want you to work basically 100% of the time.
You don't want to sign up for a company that's called partial credit.
Right, exactly. You want the full credit one, the real ambitious types that like
right.
where their hands shoot up into the air at every question. That's the kind of energy company you want.
So should we talk about this big antiquated system?
Yeah. So like I said, it's considered a modern marvel. And part of the reason why it's considered a modern marvel is just from its sheer enormous size.
Yeah, I mean, big time. We're talking 19,000 generators, mm-hmm. and in this case, it is literally generating the power like a coal plant or a natural gas plant or a wind farm, that kind of thing.
Sure.
55,000 substations, transmission substations, and we've talked about this before and we'll get to it later, but this is when you're stepping up and stepping down power to get it in and out of your house.
Mm-hmm.
Or I guess not out of your house. It only comes in.
It depends. If you have a good solar array and like a power
true.
Company that wants your stuff,
true,
you can
actually.
Sell the excess stuff. It's rare.
642,000 miles of transmission lines.
It's a lot.
6.3 million miles of distribution lines. Mm-hmm. And these are like the power poles, unless you're lucky enough to have buried power lines.
I know. It looks so much better.
They're doing that actually in our neighborhood finally.
Oh,
and they approached us with a dollar figure to say, can we put this huge, big green thing in your front yard? And we said, thank you, no.
Yeah.
Try someone else.
Yeah, you're like, not these neighbors. We like them. But three doors down, they really suck. So try them.
Well, I mean, it doesn't have to go in our yard. So I think they're just taking volunteers who want to make a little scratch.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't, like, plant bushes in front of it or anything. And our front yard is very exposed. It would look really bad.
Yeah, and we'll talk about what those are. But they are seriously dangerous too if you end up getting into one of those.
The things that kids play on all the time?
Yeah, it's crazy. Those are really, really dangerous. Basically mini power stations. They're transformers.
Yeah.
They just happen to be like on the ground rather than up on a pole where everybody's used to them.
Yeah, I mean, I felt kind of bad at first because I thought, am I not doing my part to make sure our neighborhood gets buried?
Mm-hmm.
But they said that, you know, it doesn't have to go there, and they can just – that there are a lot of people that are going to want that, however much money it was.
Were they like, okay, well, you know, we understand your decision, but we noticed you have an empty lot behind your house, right. And you're like, keep walking. I heard
oh,
about
dude,
you guys.
You know what's funny?
What?
We found out once we assumed that property that we were squatting on mm-hmm. that 2 weeks later, Georgia Power got in touch with them. So
no, I know. That's why I made that joke.
But that was exactly what was going to happen.
Right, yeah. For
it's not a joke.
I know, but I was joking about how close you came.
Oh, goodness me. All right, so let's talk about the nationwide network. And when we're talking about this, keep in mind, we're talking about the lower 48. Obviously, Hawaii and Alaska have their own grids and systems.
Yeah, they were strangely left out of this, the poor dears.
Yeah, but we're thinking about them.
Yeah.
But on the lower 48, we have basically three big separate grids that are called interconnections.
And really, it should just be two. There should be
yeah.
the Eastern Interconnection, which is basically everything west of the Rockies. or east of the Rockies, a lot of the Great Plains states up to the Northeast, the Southeast, all that is the Eastern connection. Then you've got the Western interconnection, which is west of the Rockies, and then you got Texas. Those are the three interconnections of the United States electrical grid.
Yeah, here's my question. Is Texas literally no longer connected at all?
No. That's the big rub about the whole thing. They're connected to God and everybody. They're connected to Mexico. Mexico saved their tuchus in 2011. They're connected to everybody. They just somehow are being left out of the law. It's ridiculous.
No, but they are connected.
Yes.
Yes. Because I was going to say, is it the lower 47? But technically they are connected, but they're just, Texas is going to do Texas.
No, and there's even, that's exactly right. And then there's even parts of Texas, including El Paso and some parts of the Panhandle, that are connected to either the Eastern or the Western interconnection. But most of Texas, by far, is its own interconnection, its own
like
separate
90%.
Basic grid. Yeah.
Yeah.
Even more than that, I would say it's probably closer to like 95 or 98%, like almost all of it.
Okay. All right. Well, this is good, though, that we're interconnected. And there are a lot of big benefits to that, chief of which is probably reliability, because when you have such an interconnected grid, you can work together, and there's a lot of backups and redundancies built in. So if there's a big demand in one place, or if power goes down in one place, you can reroute and get some help from your neighbors, basically.
Right, exactly. And that actually came about, as we'll see, from a little bit of deregulation. But also it kind of developed from power producers realizing like, well, we'll talk about that in a minute. There's also flexibility, right? Mm-hmm. So if you have like a bunch of different sources, say you've got a wind farm offshore in Florida, and then you also have, you're getting power from like a dam in Georgia, and all of these are providing power to the Southeast, and you have all sorts of coal-fired power plants and nuclear power plants, you can kind of put all these together into an energy portfolio, and all of them are providing electricity to the grid. So the fact that it's like interconnected, it can accept electrical production from generators all over the place and from different varieties and types. But as far as you're concerned, it all just turns into electricity after it's generated.
Right. And then the last advantage is affordability. And this is kind of what you were hinting at. You know, deregulation sort of has giveth and taken away in some ways. Starting in the 80s, the grid was open to wholesale competition, and private power companies started investing in certain efficiencies, and that did really make electricity affordable in the U.S. Mm-hmm. But it also, when it comes to like insulating pipelines, like Texas did not do, it makes companies more reticent to invest in money like that, because they're like, you know, why would we want to unline our pockets?
Right,
you know
exactly
what I'm saying?
And so you put all this stuff together. You put the power generation plants, you put the transmission lines, you put the distribution networks that all go into like people's homes and businesses and end up as like an outlet or a socket or something like that. And that all together, all those components, is the electrical grid. And that's it.
Ta-da.
So let's take a break, and we'll come back and talk a little bit about the history of the grid. How about that?
Let's do it.
Okay.
Hey everybody, it's halftime and the scoreboard is not looking good. You're feeling low and not sure you can pull out a win, and that's when you have to dig deep, lift your head up, and say to yourself, time to get back in the game. Pull off some bank heists and take as much of your friend's money as you possibly can.
That's right. The smash hit mobile game Monopoly Go lets you compete with your friends to get the most riches and the biggest empire. It's the Monopoly you love, but on your phone, anytime, with tons of new twists, including leaderboards to compare your progress to your buddies.
That's right. You can play on countless dynamic Monopoly boards. You can make your friends bankrupt by smashing their landmarks with a wrecking ball, and you can charge other players rent for your iconic properties.
Plus, you can even work with your friends to crack open community chests in tournaments to get rewards and climb the leaderboard.
So get back out there, put on your game face, and download Monopoly Go, now free on the App Store or Google Play.
Change.
Hey, everybody, it's time you heard about Squarespace. Squarespace has the tools you need to create and sell your own website. Whether it's an online course or custom merch, Squarespace has you covered.
That's right. Courses is a great program. You can start with a professional layout that fits your brand, upload video lessons to teach techniques and skills, and tailor your course with a powerful Fluid Engine editor.
That's right. With Fluid Engine, which is a next generation website design system, by the way, it's never been easier for anyone to unlock unbreakable creativity.
That's right. And don't forget the commerce side, because after that, you can charge a one-time fee or you can even sell a subscription.
Yeah. So turn your creativity into income with Squarespace courses. And right now, go to squarespace.com/stuff for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use offer code STUFF to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. Squarespace.
Chuck, also, before we talk about the history, I want to direct everybody to what I think is one of our better science-based episodes, How Electricity Works.
Yeah, that was a good one.
We cover some of this stuff in there, but like we really got into electricity. It was electrifying.
Boo.
You laughed.
I know. I'm just laughing because you're my friend.
And thanks, man. I
can't punch
that.
You right now because you're in a different place.
Yeah, that's true. I probably wouldn't have tried that joke were we in the same room.
Right. You learned from the last one.
Mm-hmm.
And I know we talked, like you said, about part of this in electricity, but our earliest power grids were built in the 1880s, and they were all very local and specific.
Mm-hmm.
And this was a time and place when Edison and Tesla were duking it out in a very public, sometimes grotesque way, to prove that their, in Edison's case, DC system or Tesla's AC alternating current system was better, and gruesome meaning electrifying large animals.
I know, man. That SOB.
You always got to say that, right?
Oh, yeah. He should go down in history as being reviled for that. Yeah, he's a terrible guy in that respect, for sure.
But Tesla won out in large part due to a lot of financial backing from George Westinghouse.
Right. But not just that. Like, direct current has...
It was better.
In some ways, but it also has some serious disadvantages to alternating current, which was the Tesla-Westinghouse version.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll talk about exactly why, but just, you know, remember that alternating current is way better for long-distance transmission. So
yeah,
the fact that we went with alternating current meant that we could create this huge, extensive grid with hundreds of thousands or millions of miles of transmission and distribution line. That's all thanks to Nikola Tesla's alternating current.
That's right. So early part of the 20th century, there were about 4,000 individual electric utilities,
mm-hmm,
with all these tiny grids. And then World War II rolls around and there's a big spike in demand for more power because it was just after World War II. There was a big boom, lots of new appliances and fancy new things, mm-hmm, that needed power. And the smaller little independent grids looked at each other and said, I guess we got to hold hands now and start working together to meet this demand.
Yeah, there was this really big push to electrify America that FDR took up pretty early in his presidency. And he, like, took on these really, like, powerful electric utilities and got a bunch of black eyes as a result of it, but ended up, mm-hmm, winning, passing the Federal Power Act of 1935, which basically put a leash on the holding companies. That there was like a handful of very large, powerful holding companies that basically ran electricity in the United States. And they weren't really innovating. They weren't doing much to electrify the U.S. So the federal government got involved and basically took over and said, we're going to regulate you guys from now on. And the United States became very much electrified, like as a whole country. But in return for this, it wasn't just the nanny state taking away from the corporate state. They said, how about this? We'll give you guys monopolies that we're going to keep a really close eye on and we're going to, mm-hmm, regulate strongly, but you guys can make your costs back and a reasonable profit. And
yeah,
so owning an electric company became It was like printing your own money. You know, like you had so many customers that you were making gobs of money, and every year your growth of the entire industry was about 8% each year. That's really good. And it was also money in the bank. They knew that America was just going to keep consuming and consuming and consuming. So they would just build more and more power plants, and they were just going to sit back and collect 8% a year. And actually, everybody was happy. There was a lot of innovation and everything. But one of the things that these different power monopolies learned early on is that everyone expected power on demand 24 hours a day. If somebody wanted to plug their vacuum cleaner in at 3 a.m., they better have power. There wasn't like downtime that these guys could factor in. And as we'll see, there was no storage capacity. That's something that we need to get that we don't have, which means that power has to be generated constantly, and you also have to have backup power. It was really, really expensive to build a backup power station. And so these early companies figured out that they could buy power from other rival companies that had some surplus right then, cheaper than it would be for them to generate it or to build a backup generating plant. And in this way, the early independent grids started to connect to one another to kind of buy and sell power as needed. And this kind of wholesale power market developed. And that's where the grid started to connect together.
Right. And we should also point out that in 1935, with the passing of the Federal Power Act, that's when Texas said, nah.
Yeah.
Said, we're going to do our own thing. We're going to make our own power. We're going to keep our own power. And we're going to have our own body to oversee it, called the ERCOT, the Electric Reliability Council of Texas.
Millions of listeners just went, boo, hiss.
They created that in 1970, and they manage about 90% of the grid in Texas.
Right.
And we use a lot of power in this country. I think the U.S. consumed, this is a couple of years ago in 2019, 3.9 trillion kilowatt hours, which is about 13,000 kilowatt hours per human. And you'd think like, oh, that's got to be the most in the world. There's about a dozen countries ahead of us, but those are countries where it can get really, really cold or really, really hot, not places like the United States, where comparatively to other places like us, we use a lot more per person.
Yeah, so 13,000 kilowatt hours per person. It sounds like a lot, and it is a lot. But in Iceland, they use 53,000 kilowatt hours per person on average.
They got to heat those saunas.
Isn't that crazy? But for in their defense, they're making most of that electricity from geothermal.
Right,
so,
of course.
Who cares? Use as much electricity as you want. And then I know some of our other listeners don't just live in the U.S., so Canada actually beats the United States in per capita consumption. They use 15.6 thousand kilowatt hours. Australia's better at it than we are. They use 10,000. New Zealand's 9,000 kilowatt hours. And then for our three German listeners, 7,000 kilowatt hours. And then in the U.K., I think it's about 5,000 kilowatt hours
Wunderbar.
Per person. Yeah, exactly. Welcome, bienvenue.
What was that?
Cabaret, I think.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, it is cabaret. I think it's like the opening of it.
I just know cabaret from Schitt's Creek.
Right, same here. I mean, I was
gonna
familiar
watch it, though,
before, but yeah, that's where I've seen most of cabaret from that episode of Schitt's Creek.
Yeah, Emily and I both are like, we need to see Cabaret, though, now.
Dude, I started watching What We Do in the Shadows again from the beginning.
TV show?
Yes, it's so... it's one of the best comedies ever put on television.
Yeah, and it's sort of a rare case of taking a movie, changing the cast up for television, and it's just as good.
Yeah. Yeah,
The movie was great. The TV show was great.
I have to admit, I haven't seen all of the movie, but from what I saw of the movie, I prefer the TV show.
I love them both. I think for a good 6 months after the TV show, we would walk around the house saying, this effing guy, about like every dude that we saw.
Every single character in that is just it's just great. Thank you, people who made What We Do in the Shadows. Thank you, Jermaine.
It is wonderful. So as far as what we use that power for here in the States, and I guess this is lower 48, who knows what they're doing in Alaska and Hawaii. But 38% of that power consumption is residential, people like you and I.
Sure.
And, or you and me.
Or and we.
The bulk of that is 44% of that is heating and cooling our homes and making hot water showers.
For sure.
Or washing dishes.
And then the rest is, you know, running appliances, charging your laptop, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
The other 61.5% is non-residential stuff, commercial, things like office buildings, and then industrial, which is mostly used for running motors or because America loves its lathes. I thought of that earlier, and I was like, oh, yeah, I've seen pictures of lathe accidents before. So I spent a good 20 minutes looking at lathe accident photos.
Oh, my Lord.
Which I do not recommend, but I didn't see that coming up when I started researching this.
I used a lathe back in industrial arts in high school.
Dude, once I found out how dangerous those things were, I would never
go near.
Get near one.
That's, you have all your baseball bats made by someone else now.
Right, yeah, I sub out that part of my life.
So the good news is with energy efficiencies, they've really come a long way over the past couple of decades. The whole Energy Star program and just appliances being made much more efficiently than they used to be. It's only going to increase, I think, the demand by 1% a year from now to 2050, which is good, but that's still 31% increase, which is a lot.
But it's astounding that as we keep consuming more and more electricity, and we do, we use a lot, they figured out, like, these Americans are nuts. They're just going to keep consuming and consuming. We better figure out how to make our stuff more energy efficient, and that they've managed to offset all but 1% of that growth per year. Because I can only imagine if we were still working with, you know, 1930s-style blenders and vacuum cleaners, good Lord, we'd be sucking the coal directly out of the earth, like straight into your vacuum cleaner. It'd be so wasteful.
Yeah, and I imagine that they are always working on this. Like, I assume the goal is to have the negative number there, don't you think?
From your lips to God's ear, Chuck.
Like, wouldn't that be great if they were like, it's going to go down by 2 or 3% per year?
I mean, that would be great. That's actually, hopefully, we're going to talk a lot about how to fix the grid, and one of the suggestions is to create this smart grid, and one of the big components of it is to basically allow you and me, I and you, to see how much electricity we use through interfaces that are similar to, like, online banking. Like, we would be aware and managing our electricity use with that level of, like, minute interface, right? And that by doing that, we would start to consume less. We would be certainly less wasteful. So it's possible that we might go down compared to, like, 2020 levels. Who knows?
That'd be great.
It would be wonderful.
One of the big changes about, I think, like, basically all of the coal, nuclear, and renewable resources we have in this country are consumed, most of it, for creating energy, and I think about a third of natural gas. But natural gas has been a big boon. We did an episode on fracking, and say what you want about it, but there is a lot more natural gas now. It has lowered the cost. Gas-fired generators are cheaper to build. They burn cleaner than coal do.
Yeah, by half.
They're more nimble. They can respond quicker to big increases in demand. So it's gone up, I think, from 1990 to 2019, from 12% of our energy mix to 38%.
Yeah, and we should probably just say for full disclosure, we are deeply underwritten as a podcast by both Enron and Exxon. Right. So just heads up on that one. Fracking's sure. Tops.
Yes.
When you do generate electricity, you're not actually, you don't create energy. Electricity is an energy carrier, right? Which is why it's like it all turns into the same thing from all these different sources. But the people who run the grid have figured out, like, there's specific kinds of generation plants you want to run. And there's basically three of them. One is base load, which is your average, say, usually coal-fired power plant that's running almost all the time, and that provides the vast majority of the electricity that's being consumed at any given point. Then there's load-following plants, which are, at this time, natural gas-powered plants, but they may overtake gas or coal in the United States at some point. Those are a little more... a little less frequently run if you're like, I think we're going to need some more some more juice because it's Christmas time and everybody's got their lights up. You might spark up the old load following plants. And then lastly, there's one called peaker plants, like a peak, like a peak capacity, where mm-hmm. when you start this up, you're basically like burning diamonds. It's so expensive to run these things. And that means that the demand is going crazy and the prices are going sky high. So turn up the peaker plant because we need that extra capacity.
Yeah, and just quickly to tick through where we get the rest of these, the rest of the fuel sources. I said natural gas is 38%, coal is 23%, mm-hmm. nuclear is 20%, wind is 7%, hydroelectric is 7%, biomass is 2%, solar 1.8%, which is still pretty low considering how many people have gotten on that train.
I would say it's objectively shameful.
Yeah, that it'd be nice to see that number go up.
Yeah.
But there are 145 million households and businesses connected to this grid in the U.S. And the reason it all works, and we talked about this, it's still just amazing to me how it all works. We talked about it in electricity, but mm-hmm. the ability to send electricity over long distances and step it up and step it down to make it power your coffee machine is a modern miracle. It's amazing.
Right. And that's one of the big advantages of alternating current electricity. It's, I guess you can do it with DC, but it's way more difficult and way more expensive. So for all intents and purposes, it's AC that you can step up and step down. And when you do that, you do that because current, which is the flow of electrons, like down a line, is inversely proportionate to what's called voltage. Right?
Yeah, it's a little confusing.
It is. Voltage is kind of like the pressure you put on a line, like the pressure of the flow where the current is the actual flow, right? And mm-hmm. if you have a very high current of electricity, you unfortunately get a lot of resistance on the transmission lines. And when you have a lot of resistance, you lose a lot of electricity to heat. But fortunately for power generators, if you up the voltage, right, up the pressure mm-hmm. that you're putting on the line, it actually decreases the current. And if you decrease the current, then you decrease the energy loss. So they figured out that if they can take, you know, when they generate the stuff at power plants, it's like 2,000 volts, maybe up to 20,000 volts. But then they step up the voltage to hundreds of thousands of volts. I think some transmission lines are able to take about 750,000 volts. Which is...
That's amazing.
It is. Like, if you get shocked by, like, a electrical socket in your house, that's 120 volts. This is 750,000 volts. The current goes down so dramatically that you lose almost none of the electricity over very, very long distances of transmission. So that's really a huge benefit of alternating current, that you can step them up. And then, when you get toward neighborhoods and stuff, step them back down.
Yeah, I think they lose about 6% of electricity generated in the United States, which, you know, that's a fairly low number, but I think they're always trying to make that better.
Yeah, because, I mean, let's see, somewhere else, where is that number? There's a, we do something like 4.5 trillion kilowatt hours are generated in the United States, so 6% of that is lost. That's an astounding amount of electricity that's lost. Any improvement on that would be huge.
Yeah, that'd be great. So in your house, like you said, you have, here in the States, we have 120 volts. So you have these substations that step it down to about 12,000. Then it goes to your power lines, and then those, you know, those gray sort of cylindrical cans mm-hmm. at the top of the things, those are very important. They step it down even further to about 240. Then by the time you get into your house, it's down to 120. Mm-hmm. And you're, well, I was about to say you're cooking with gas, but you're not. You're cooking with electricity.
Nice. So those gray can transformers are the same thing as that green death box that they wanted to put in your front yard, except the green death box, it's called a pad mount transformer. That's for underground power lines. The gray cans are for overhead lines. But they do the same thing. They step it down to a much less deadly and much more usable voltage of electricity.
Yeah, we have a lot of, you know, Atlanta just has a lot of outages, period, because we have a, it's a city in a forest, and we have a ton of trees, a ton of really old trees, like most of the, not most, but a lot of the old oak trees in Atlanta are coming down, or at the very least, large limbs are coming down, and it's a problem. So my neighborhood, especially, we have a lot of blackouts. So hopefully this burying the lines project will work out pretty well.
Yeah, the tree thing, it's important. It's like kind of part of that whole reliability thing, as we'll see, is keeping trees trimmed away from power lines.
Yeah, which is why a power company might knock on your door one day and say, hi, we need to cut a lot of your tree back.
Right.
And you have to say yes.
Well, yeah, they might not even say that. They might just show up and start cutting your tree and be like, that's what true. Are you going to do about it? And I'm just like, that was uncalled for.
Should we take another break?
Sure.
Before you get in another fight with a power person?
Yeah, they started it, Chuck.
All right. Well, we'll take a break and we'll come back and talk about all this gobbledygook a little bit more. Hey, everybody. It's halftime and the scoreboard is not looking good. You're feeling low and not sure you can pull out a win. And that's when you have to dig deep, lift your head up, and say to yourself, time to get back in the game. Pull off some bank heists and take as much of your friend's money as you possibly can.
That's right. The smash hit mobile game Monopoly Go lets you compete with your friends to get the most riches and the biggest empire. It's the Monopoly you love, but on your phone, anytime, with tons of new twists, including leaderboards to compare your progress to your buddies.
That's right. You can play on countless dynamic Monopoly boards. You can make your friends bankrupt by smashing their landmarks with a wrecking ball. And you can charge other players rent for your iconic properties.
Plus, you can even work with your friends to crack open community chests in tournaments to get rewards and climb the leaderboard.
So get back out there, put on your game face, and download Monopoly Go, now free on the App Store or Google Play.
And now a word from the show's sponsors at Betterment. Let's talk about hustle culture, shall we? You know, the whole rise and grind, go big or go home thing. It's a lifestyle that might not be for you.
That's right, but one that your money can handle thanks to Betterment. Betterment is the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle.
How? Good question. Their automated technology optimizes your investments again and again. With Betterment, your money is taking ice baths at 5 a.m. while you get your well-deserved rest. Your money downs protein smoothies and automatically reinvests your dividends, all before you head out the door. Your money is a workaholic.
But you don't have to be, because you've got Betterment, the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. So visit Betterment.com to get started. Investing involves risk. Performance is not guaranteed.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
Hey friends, as every parent knows, kids seem to be everywhere all at once, and it's really tough for even the most watchful moms and dads to protect their little ones from every single thing.
Yeah, Duracell understands this, and that's why they're deeply committed to lithium coin battery safety. Lithium coin batteries power a bunch of important things around people's homes, including things young children may have access to. So Duracell not only educates parents, caregivers, and medical professionals about the importance of lithium coin battery safety, they also make the only lithium coin batteries with a non-toxic bitter coating to help discourage children from swallowing them.
Even Duracell's packaging is child secure and designed to avoid accidental opening, because they believe their product should provide more than just power. They should also provide peace of mind. You can learn more at Duracell.com/power safely. Available on 2032, 2025, and 2016 sizes. Uh, All righty. So you mentioned earlier the monopoly situation that was broken up largely because of the energy crisis of the 1970s. And we said, hey, let's open it up. Let's get the market going and get some competitive pricing happening. Mm-hmm. And everyone did that. And not everyone. In the Southeast, we still have a lot of the big utility companies. But they still needed some sort of oversight. And there are a lot of different ways that these things are regulated. If you look at a state level, you're going to be regulated by a public utility commission or a public service commission. Mm-hmm. And then when you start horse trading and Alabama says to Georgia, hey, we need some power. And you're like, wait, I'm getting some power from Tennessee right now. Hold on the other line. Mm-hmm. That's got to be regulated too. So the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission oversees those transactions.
The FERC.
Yes, FERC.
So they're supposed to, as we'll see, they fall down on the job kind of frequently and huge catastrophic things happen when they do. but yeah, so when they started to be regulated, especially in the deregulated in the 70s, strangely enough, it was Jimmy Carter's administration who opened up competition. You would think that would have been a squarely a Ronald Reagan kind of thing. But Carter did it to encourage conservation of energy and to create that competition to see who could deliver this stuff and kind of innovate more, just basically shake up the stodgy old energy companies. But the problem is remember I said like it was money in the bank. You could just kick back and expect 8% growth year over year every single year, and people are just going to keep using electricity. All of a sudden, there's a totally new mindset in America, which was, whoa, 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 we're using way too much electricity and energy. We need to conserve. And now all these power companies started kind of losing money. And when they started to lose money, they stopped doing important things like cutting down trees or cutting down off tree limbs or servicing their lines as much. Like all the stuff that made them more reliable just stopped happening quite as frequently. And so you started to see things like enormous, massive blackouts that, you know, affected millions of people for days, where you didn't really see that often before. I think the first one ever was in 1965, but the really big ones started coming more frequently around about 2000, I think. That was kind of kicked off by the California energy crisis.
And then, you know, we were talking about the regulatory bodies. Those were just for the public utilities themselves. Mm-hmm. Then you have these transmission networks, and they have to be managed as well. And I think FERC stepped in and said, we need some sort of independent management and oversight here, because basically we got to make sure that everyone has equal access to this grid.
Right.
And so these interconnections that we talked about, those three interconnections, they're divided up into more than a dozen independent nonprofits that are called regional transmission organizations or independent system operators. Mm-hmm. And I think the idea there is they're not in it for the money. They're there to kind of really just make sure everyone is being treated fairly and doing the right thing.
Right. That everybody has access to the grid, that's supposed to get access to the grid. But also they're also the modern incarnation of those power pools where like utilities would buy and sell power to one another. Yeah. As needed, these are the groups that kind of oversee those transactions.
Right. So you mentioned the grid failing in California. I was there at the time, and I remember these rolling blackouts. California in the late 90s and early 2000s, early aughts, mm-hmm. Had to institute these emergency rolling blackouts. And I remember when I was living there a couple of times, it was all over the news. You know, it was big news. Mm-hmm. And I remember a couple of times like, you know, losing power because they just had to.
Yeah. So there was, I guess, California, and Enron actually makes an appearance. Every time there was a huge, colossal blackout, you could trace that its origins back a couple of years to Enron lobbying to get somebody to get things deregulated, get a wholesale market built up. And they managed to do that in California. And California found itself in this weird position where the really big utility companies like PG&E or Southern California Edison were capped at how much they could charge retail for mm-hmm. energy, for electricity. But at the same time, in this new wholesale market, they had to buy electricity and it wasn't being regulated. Remember I said that FERC sometimes falls down on the job? Well, they weren't regulating this wholesale market in California like they were supposed to. And so one day in the summer, or 1 month, I should say, starting in June of 2000, the wholesale prices went through the roof. It went from about $30 the year before to $375 a megawatt hour in 2000. And all of a sudden, PG&E is having to pay through the nose for this energy, but they can't pass the cost along to their customers. And yet they're also legally obligated to continue to provide electricity to their customers. So they found themselves in this impossible situation. Some people still today say that they turned off the power because they didn't have the supply. But they swear that they did not do that and that they just ran out of supply because they couldn't get it any longer.
Well, yeah, and as a result, PG&E and Southern Cal Edison, they were financially strapped. So they were in a situation where they had independent energy suppliers in surrounding states that were like, and I know you guys are in trouble, but I don't want to sell you my stuff because I don't know that I'm going to get paid back now.
Right.
So California was in a bind in the early aughts. And there were also technical problems and stuff. I think there was low water levels in the Pacific Northwest.
Which was huge because California at the time, I don't know if there is, it's different now, they were not self-sufficient energy-wise. They depended on the surplus of other states.
Yeah. So, you know, if there was low water levels in the Pacific Northwest, that's less electricity being sent south. Mm-hmm. And they also basically had these high voltage power lines from Southern California to Northern California. And they were crashing. They were failing because they were just overburdened, basically. So they said, we got to do these rolling blackouts. And I think the biggest one was March 2001, affected about 1.5 million customers.
Yeah. And like you said, that they these independent energy producers wouldn't sell them electricity because they didn't think they were going to get paid back. The whole thing finally ended when the governor had the water board, the state water board, go buy energy or electricity on behalf of them because the state was, you know, the state had a good enough credit to buy electricity, but their two biggest electricity utilities didn't have a good enough credit. Isn't that crazy?
Who was the governor back then? I'm trying to remember. Yeah, Gray Davis. I was like, was that the governator?
No, I think he was just after Gray Davis, wasn't he?
And then I saw it. Was Arnold Schwarzenegger actually the governor?
Yeah, for years.
California?
For years.
It was, I mean, that was after I left. It was just after I left. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was, 2003, 2011.
At the same time that Jesse the Body Ventura was the governor of Minnesota.
No way, man.
All we needed was Carl Weathers as the governor of Georgia and Billy.
Roddy Piper.
Yeah. No, I'm doing Predator here.
Oh, okay. I missed that.
I can't remember the guy who played Billy.
Or maybe just the Predator. Sweet.
Sure. The Predator was president in 2005. Don't you know?
I haven't seen that movie in so long. I bet your Predator holds up.
Yeah, I saw it in the last few years and it does.
Yeah?
Yep.
I'll check that out. There was a big blackout in the Northeast. I remember this one as well in 2003. This was big time. This was 50 million people in the U.S. and even parts of Canada lost power for a couple of days in some case. 11 deaths. And this one, like, it was like a movie or something how this one started.
Yeah. Remember I said that tree cutting kind of fell to the wayside a little bit when they stopped making as much money? Well, that's what happened here. It was really, really hot, and there was a lot of demand, and those lines were just blazing, so much so that they actually started to sag. Like, the atomic composition of the metal was put under that much stress, and they sagged into a tree branch, and arced, which is basically like lightning is produced, right? Mm-hmm. There was this teenager in Ohio who noticed that his outlets were smoking throughout his house. And it just so happened that there was a tree-cutting crew outside of his house on the other side of the street, and he ran out to tell them, and they basically told him to get lost. And hours went by, and there was a bunch of cascading power failures, which normally would have been caught, right? But there was some human error involved?
Yeah, this was the, sort of the movie part. I mean, it might as well have been like a rat chewing on a wire or something. Mm-hmm. There's monitoring software that, like you said, is usually like, hey, emergency, something's going on. But the software was being glitchy. And so a technician with, I guess, like mustard stains on his shirt turns it off, tries to fix it, and forgets to turn it back on.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yep. And so because the power grid is especially interconnected up in the Northeast, this power outage in Ohio meant that there was power outages in Pennsylvania and elsewhere. Mm-hmm. And I think, did you say 11 people died?
11 people died. So, you know, the federal regulator stepped in and was like, we need a catchy new slogan to improve this. And so how about the three T's, trimming, training, and tools? Mm-hmm. And everyone rolled their eyes.
Fine.
And said, whatever, boomer.
Yeah.
We'll get on those three T's.
They just
toot sweet.
Turned the volume up on Wichita Lineman, which is the only song they ever yeah. listened to over and over again.
The fourth T was toot sweet.
Nice.
So now Texas, we're in Texas. We're not literally in Texas, but we're in Texas now in spirit because very recently a big freak winter storm hit, mm-hmm. as everyone knows, mm-hmm. and everyone needed a lot more heat than they usually do at this time of year in Texas. I think they usually require about 67,000 megawatts a day in the winter.
That's what they plan for.
Yeah, compared to 86,000 megawatts in the summer. Mm-hmm. And all of this makes sense. We're not saying like, you're wrong, Texas, for not, you know, being ready for this weird freak storm. I mean, that was the cause of it. But you also have to take into consideration that, like we said, some of those lines weren't insulated like they should have been because of money. Mm-hmm. And wind and solar is not going to work as well in the winter anyway. And I think those wind farms weren't winterized as well, right?
Yeah, some of them did. Apparently, a surprising number kept spinning. But the big problem was the gas pipelines freezing over. So instead of the planned for 67,000 megawatts of power, they ended up with 31,000 because of those failures in the actual system. So they had 30,000 megawatts. They needed a lot more than that. They probably needed about 50,000 more megawatts than they had. And so all of a sudden, power just started going out. And Texas supposedly isn't connected to anything, so Texas went dark, and everybody mm-hmm. started to get very cold and couldn't cook and couldn't boil water, couldn't take showers, they lived in a very dangerous situation because this is sub-freezing temperatures, and these areas are not set up for that kind of thing.
Yeah, and if you want to get your feathers ruffled and get a little riled up, go read this New York Times article about the exorbitant power bills that some of these people got that were able to stay online. There's a 63-year-old Army vet who had to pay $16,000 for his monthly bill, which wiped out his entire savings. A lot of people were reportedly, including this guy, customers of a company called Gritty, G-R-I-D-D-Y.
Okay.
I mean, you have to laugh at a name like that. But they provide electricity at wholesale prices. And the deal with Gritty is it really quickly changes based on supply and demand. Mm-hmm. So they sell it to the customers as, hey, we're going to pass this wholesale price directly to you for a low $9.99 monthly fee. Mm-hmm. And the rate's going to fluctuate, but it's really no big deal because it fluctuates just sort of reasonably. They saw this huge jump coming, apparently. And they encouraged their customers, 29,000 people, to switch to another provider when the storm came, which is just not that easy to do.
Right.
And a lot of it is through an app. A lot of people were like literally connected to their bank. So people would literally watch $12,000 drain out of their bank account before their very eyes. And they can't do anything about it. And the architect of the Texas energy grid, his name is, where is it here? William Hogan. He said, you know what? This thing is, it worked exactly like it was supposed to because high prices reflected the market performing as it was designed. Mm-hmm. And he said, as you get closer and closer to the bare minimum, these prices get higher and higher, which is what you want.
What is that guy's nickname, Milton Friedman? I mean, how heartless. But yes, it's true in fact, but it's a pretty heartless way to look at it, you know?
Yeah, and I think Governor Abbott has stepped in and said, like, wait a minute, but we can't, people can't be going broke, like paying for like 3 and 4 years worth of energy in a single month.
Well, that's the opposite of what the George W. Bush said when he was governor of Texas in 1998. He passed a bill that said you have to pay whatever the energy company charges you as a consumer.
Yeah. So I'm not sure what they're going to do, if they can retroactively reimburse some of these people, but it's, I don't know. That's horrifying, man. 16 grand.
I know, especially when it's taken direct. Like, this isn't even like a, well, hold on. I'm not going to pay this yet. I want to talk this over. It's like, that's gone. Now I have to go try to get it back.
Yeah, good luck.
Yeah, that's terrible stuff. So sorry, Texas, that that happened. But the other thing about it, Chuck, too, is like, you know, yeah, they weren't prepared for it. And it was a freak winter storm that just doesn't happen. But a lot of people are saying, hey, welcome to the age of climate change. This is not just a freak storm anymore. This stuff is actually going to keep happening. And Texas had virtually the same thing happen in 2011.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a panel that was created to figure out how to prevent that from happening again. They gave ERCOT a whole list of things to do, including like winterization, like insulating their pipes. ERCOT didn't do it, and it happened again. So I think Texas's patience with ERCOT not listening to that kind of stuff has probably reached an end.
So how do we fix this stuff? You mentioned the smart grid. I think about, I mean, just our infrastructure in this country is in bad shape, period. 70% of large power transformers and transmission lines are at least 25 years old. Mm-hmm. 60% of circuit breakers are 30 years old. And you mentioned the smart grid, and I think that's, they're starting to do some of it, but that's the solution going forward, right?
Yeah. I mean, like, it doesn't matter where you are on the left or the right or in the middle. Everyone is like, yes, smart grid, smart grid. We need a smart grid. And that's basically like the grid we have now, but just slowly, piecemeal, improved little by little to add way more back and forth communication between the generators, the transmitters, the distributors, and the end user. There's a lot more automated sensing built into this system, which makes the whole thing a lot more clever and makes like rerouting around problems a lot easier. But also one of the big things is making you and me and I and we a lot more savvy about the energy that we consume from moment to moment.
Yeah, I mean, there's that. And I also feel like the smart grid, most of it kind of falls under the banner of real-time micro observance.
Right.
Whereas what we have now is very sluggish, very old-fashioned. I mean, it can be, it's like the difference between, you know, digital smartphone technology and like the old like crank phones from the old days.
Basically, yeah. If there's a power outage, the way that the electrical generators find out about it is there's a series of towers where bonfires are lit from mountain to mountain. And they finally see one that's lit close enough, and they start to like ramp up production. That's how it happens now.
It's amazing.
But there's also, so, I mean, you've got things like feeder switches that basically go around a problem area. If you got a down transmission line, it can just go around it, and then, you know, it doesn't black everybody out. Smart meters, so you kind of see how much energy you're using, and then also how much the price of energy is, so you can actually save money if you want to kind of get into it in that granular level. And then also just making sure that there's storage. That's the big challenge. We talked about that in our renewable energy episode with Bill Gates, is storage. We
batteries.
Don't have anywhere to put excess, so we shuffle it around the grid. But if we have storage places strategically put around the United States, that would change absolutely everything.
Yeah, as well as getting more direct use, which is solar. Mm-hmm. I actually have a little solar project going I'm very excited about.
Very nice.
Not for my house, but I know you know this. We have some acreage in North Georgia on a river that no house or anything. It's just land.
There's just a van down by the river.
There may be a van one day. Uh-huh. But it's just we call it the camp. It's friends and family camp, and I'm trying to style it out like a legit like state park campground. Uh-huh. And as of right now, as of like 3 days ago, I'm having a pavilion built. It's going to have 3 solar panels on it. and a little battery array. So I'm going to be able to power like a big giant ceiling fan under the pavilion. Nice. And like four quad outlets and like a coffee maker, nothing huge. But he said, the guy said it'll be enough for 3 or 4 days of full power. Mm-hmm. And then like a day to juice it up. And we're never there for more than 3 days anyway. Right. So I'm technically going to have a little off-grid campground soon.
You had me at coffee maker.
And I should mention, you got me a very nice birthday gift that is going to live at that camp.
I'm so glad you like it, man. I saw it and I was like, I know exactly where this will go. And it went exactly where I thought it would go.
What is the exact name of it? I don't have the box in front of me.
Oh, man.
It's a kindling splitter, basically.
Yeah, it's like a log splitter.
But it splits it into kindling. So the coolest thing about it all is the story behind it. Is this like 12-year-old girl invented it in New Zealand. Mm-hmm. And for the last like 7 years, now she's in her early 20s. I think she was like 13 years old at the time. Mm-hmm. It's like a legit company. And this thing, you like screw it onto a log, and then you put another log in it and hit it with a heavy hammer. You even got me the heavy hammer.
Yeah. You can't not get the hammer, too.
It splits it into kindling. I'm just so excited.
Yeah, rather can't than wait. Like bringing an axe down onto a log, the axe is coming up from the bottom.
Yes, and it's very much safer. And I even looked at a YouTube video and review, and everyone was like, these things are great. So
it's safer than an axe?
I can't wait to use that. Very thoughtful gift.
That's all. Well, happy birthday again, man. I'm glad.
And six bottles of champagne.
Yeah. Did you drink it all in a weekend as suggested?
Not yet, but spring break is next week, and we're gonna get into that champagne.
Awesome, man. We'll enjoy.
Very sweet gifts.
Is that it? Did we stop talking about electricity, I think, didn't we?
I thought you meant like, are those all the gifts I gave you?
Right. You didn't get the other 8 gifts?
The half case of champagne and the log splitter.
And the hammer, the 3-pound sledge.
That's right.
Well, if you want to know more about Chuck's 3-pound sledge, you can email him. But also in the meantime, if you want to know more about the electrical grid, you can just start reading about it. It's an extraordinarily complicated, complex, modern marvel of engineering that's pretty engrossing stuff. So go to town. And in the meantime, I said go to town, which means it's time for listener mail.
I'm going to call this Titanic follow-up from a friend in Ireland. This was a fun one. Mm-hmm. Hey guys, been listening for a few years, and now I currently work in Belfast Port where RMS Titanic was built. In 2012, the Titanic Museum was built in Belfast, and the building is in the shape of a star representing white star lines, and each point of the star is the actual size of Titanic's hull at 126 feet high. Standing underneath it really gives you a feel for its size and makes you feel very small in a good way. Also, slipways for Titanic are filled in for you to walk over and etched with an outline of Titanic and its sister ship Olympic.
That's so cool.
To scale. Yeah, it's very cool. Including the actual locations of the lifeboats and funnels. Again, it's very cool to walk down. You can check it out on Google Earth. Just search Titanic Belfast. Check out the satellite view. Keep up the great work. And that is Kyle in Belfast, Northern Ireland. Mm-hmm. And he has a nice little PS joke. He says, there's a very overused joke here in Belfast when people ask us why we celebrate something that sank, which is this: it was fine when it left here.
That's great. That's that trademark Belfast humor.
I was gonna do it in an Irish accent, but I got stage fright.
Oh, come on, let's hear it again.
I don't know what. I don't even know. It was fine when it left here.
Oh, that was great, man. That just transported me to my youth when I was eating a bowl of Lucky Charms.
Or, hey, babe, it was fine when it left here.
Very nice. Let's see, Chuck, is that it?
That's got to be it.
Who was it?
Sammy Davis Jr.
Thank you, Sammy Davis Jr., for the letter.
That was Kyle.
Kyle, that's right. Kyle from Belfast, we appreciate you. And if you want to be appreciated like Kyle, you can send us a good email like Kyle did. Wrap it up, spank it on the bottom, and ship it out to sea to stuffpodcast@iheartradio.com.
Stuff You Should Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Hey everybody, are you thirsty? Well, sip on pure, refreshing Richard's rainwater. Yes, it's really rain, caught clean before it hits the ground.
Rain is naturally pure, so there's no need for harsh chemicals or additives. Richard's rainwater contains no chlorine, no forever chemicals, no microplastics, no nothing. Enjoy the smooth, clean taste of Richard's still rainwater or the long-lasting and cold-pressured bubbles of Richard's sparkling rainwater. Visit richardsrainwater.com to find a retailer near you. That's richardsrainwater.com. Sip the sky. The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. But you know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line, thanks to Visible. It's true. So switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. Switch now at Visible.com.
Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit visible.com.